that guy got it before me, but the one that I really like is Frangry. I like that first name, whether it's fake or real.
It's because it's an awesome name.
Although from now on, I have to call you Baby.
Don't ever say that again. All right, Saturn, you're on my list. Listen at the end of the hour.
Thanks.
Have a good one. I like that guy.
Saturn.
Yeah, he made me feel better. I'm back.
You're back, Baby.
Yeah.
Saying you didn't mind it when I called you Baby that time.
No, not that time. FMU, you're on the radio.
Oh, hey, I got through?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Cool, not that hard.
Cool. It's Frank.
We've been off the hook.
Oh.
Hey, Frank.
Oh, Andy's sound happy. I don't like that.
Well, I'm happy now.
No, that's how he
I'm
always
happy
is.
You got through.
Andy's sad and Frank's happy now.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to dispel some rumors. You guys said that stoners hate or love fake boobs. I hate fake boobs, and I'm a stoner.
Wait, we said that?
Do you, like...
Yeah, you guys said it at the top of the hour.
I didn't say that.
No, I think stoners like fake orgasms.
No, yeah. Stoners like fake foods, like nasty
like
junk
Doritos.
Food. Yeah. All
right.
And another thing, I saw a picture of Frangry with a fake mustache and loved it. Love him.
I think that was just your long hair in front of your face, right?
No, that was an actual fake mustache.
Picture. Well, good for you then.
Bridget brought them one day, remember?
See this? Real mustache.
I look really gross in that photo.
No, it was amazing.
Gross.
Anyway, brings me to my last point. I don't know, you probably guys probably have like no time left. Anyway, gonna be sexy Super Mario for Halloween. I actually have a real mustache. Like Mario, kinda looks like Mario, kinda curly like the one you were wearing. And I'm gonna have like overall jorts. I don't know if they're like
this sounds amazing.
Shorts. You said jorts?
Shorts.
Overall, shorts.
Overall short shorts.
Yeah. What's your name?
Frank. See, I told
you. Oh yeah,
come
Frank.
On.
Sorry, I don't have the greatest memory.
Short-term memory loss.
I'm sorry, I'm in a rush. I'm in front of these people's house, and they just pulled up. I gotta give them the food and stuff now.
All right, I want to see a picture of this costume. Send me one.
Then what? There's.
I gotta get with the internet stuff. I bought a laptop, so I think we'll be good.
Okay, I can't wait.
Love those laptops.
Have a good one.
Later, too.
Sleepy
I like
Hollow.
That guy.
Sleepy Hollow. That's the town that used to be north.
I know, everyone on the comments board said it like 20 minutes ago.
Why didn't you say it?
Because I didn't know what they were talking about.
Sleepy Hollow.
There's like four Sleepy Hollows in a row, and I was like, what are they talking about?
That's where the Headless Horseman was, you know, Washington Irving.
FMU, you're on the
now
radio.
Now there's a town of Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is Slave.
Slave?
Slave.
Okay.
And, yeah, the last caller actually took mine. I was going to say fake boobs as well, but also plastic surgery. And all that stuff that makes people look a lot uglier, but they pay a lot of money for it, and they keep doing it and doing it. That's what I hate.
Yeah, but we're talking about fake things you love.
Like push-up bras.
Things you love. Okay, so fake
like
things
push-up
I love
bras.
Attention from strippers.
That's good.
I love you.
They make it feel so real.
They do, don't they? Even I fell for it once, and I'm a chick.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens.
Was that on your birthday?
No.
Different time.
Also,
yeah, it was the first
also,
time I ever
I
felt fake boobs.
You were talking about Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
You were talking about what Tarrytown?
Yeah, North Tarrytown.
Yeah, that's Sleepy Hollow.
Slave, you're on my list. Okay. You might be my winner, so listen at the end of the hour.
Okay, I will.
Have a good one.
All right, you too.
That's what I'm talking about.
Strippers is genius. That was so good.
That's what I had in mind.
Good. It only took 55 minutes to get a good call.
That's on my secret list.
I had to go through 100 crappy ones to get one good one.
Okay. Should we name a winner and then talk about the record fair?
For 4 minutes? What is there to say? There's a bunch of sweaty dudes and it smells like socks.
And we're going to be there.
And there's records.
On Sunday.
Yeah, we'll be there Sunday 12 to 4 hosting the Wheel of Fate.
Wheel of Fate. Spin the Wheel of Fate.
It's at the Metropolitan Pavilion.
Dollar a spin, which is, I believe if memory serves, 125.
125 West 18th near 6th Avenue.
In Manhattan.
Yeah, that's all that really matters on this little thing.
So we've done that part then. We've done our duty.
Call us at 201-209-9368. Fake things you love. FMU, you're on the radio.
Hey guys, I rarely call in, but I'm really struggling with someone who's just kind of hard and badass and quick to rip people and then has a vision board. I really can't wrap my brain around that.
Shut up! I'm a softie on the inside.
She contains multitudes.
You're more complex than I thought.
Very complex.
I am. I'm a complicated young lady.
Okay, maybe that's it. I'm sorry. I'm still struggling with that.
In case you haven't noticed, my toughness is fake.
Oh, okay. Well, then we like that.
Don't tell anyone about my vision board.
It's a soft
toughness. I don't have it anymore. Whatever, I hate you guys.
you'll make a new one, though.
Yeah, I think I should.
Bring it on Sunday to the
record fair. Okay, we can put it on display.
Tiny's vision board. It should be in a museum in the hallway here
it
with
should,
the Johnny
right?
Mahler stuff, yes.
And then it changes once a month because, you know, what I want changes, like, almost hourly, so.
Leather jacket.
Yeah, shut yeah. up.
What?
I really got one.
Uggs.
Yeah, I have sparkle Uggs on my...
Okay. Chanel sunglasses.
I already have those.
All right.
All right, thanks for calling.
Right,
have
care.
A good one. That was funny. I'm sniffly.
There's a box of Kleenex here somewhere. Here.
Here's, FMU, here's you're on the
towels.
Radio.
Lock yourself out.
Yeah, this is Chris from Ohio.
Hi, Chris.
From Ohio?
Yeah, I was the guy that won your comedy show some time back. I thank you for the stickers and shirt.
Wait,
what
comedy show?
Comedy show.
Joke show.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Must have been a long time ago.
My favorite fake thing is Bumpets. You
what's
know those
that?
Fake things that the girls putting their hair out
oh,
in Jersey.
Isn't that the thing that Snooki invented?
I think so, yeah. It's unfortunately.
Oh, the
it's
thing that like
Ohio.
Makes it poof?
Yeah. But the reason I like them is the girl has one of those in her hair. You can always tell. And I want nothing to do with her.
It's like, yeah, okay, I hear you. It's like the red flag.
Bingo. Also, pink flamingos. Somebody mentioned those briefly earlier, but they're great. You can decorate someone's entire lawn with them and embarrass them to their neighbors, and they make this great hollow sound when you pee on them.
I like that.
I never knew that before.
I've so got to try it.
I learned something new.
Okay,
one
thanks.
More thing,
what?
One more favorite fake thing. Down in the Dominican last time I was there, they had a store called Dolce & Banana. After the fashion designer.
Dolce & Gabbana.
That's amazing.
We didn't go in it because we didn't have time, but I was trying to decide whether it was a dessert store or whether it was a sex toy shop.
What was it?
We don't know. We
oh, my God. I'm going to Google it. We have to find out.
We need to find out.
All right. Thanks for calling. Have a good one.
Dolce & Banana. Okay. Hey, you know what's
Andy,
another,
look at the time.
You know what's another fake thing
I'm awarding
that people love?
To the, I'm awarding
no,
the
No, you got
to
hear this.
No, Andy, we don't have time. We're already
Teddy
late.
Teddy bears.
All right. I'm awarding the prize to Slave with attention from strippers. So email me your address and T-shirt size at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org.
Oh, where did the time go? You have been listening to Shut Up Weirdo here on WFMU. You can comment during the show at wfmu.org. Visit our webpage, shutupweirdo.com, which has links to our Facebook and Twitter and iTunes. Up next, stuff you should know. You are listening to WFMU, the real original, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live and archived at WFMU.org. So let's
end it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, Josh and Chuck discuss the Black Death, and then in part two, they examine quicksand. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that makes this Stuff You Should Know. The podcast, the audio podcast. Nothing more. Got it?
Not a lot less.
Than comparably sized podcasts.
No. This is chock full of good stuff. This one's going to be, man.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I liked it.
You like this one?
Yeah, I like some of the historical stuff we do.
Man, I love it. You know, I was a history major at one point.
Yeah, man.
Love history.
Me too.
Yeah. Chuck.
Yes.
So, we're talking about the Black Death.
Yeah.
Right? Not Black Sabbath. Black Death.
Oh. Well, I'm going to need some more time then.
Okay. So, we'll wait. Hold on.
Okay. All right. I'm back. Black
okay.
Death.
Yes. Okay. You understand now what we're talking about?
Uh-huh.
Great, Chuck. I was researching this to find out, like... okay, what's newsy about the Black Death? Like, how am I going to find an intro? I actually found one.
Really?
Yeah, it's from 2006, February 2006. Oh, sorry.
That's not very newsy.
But there was a study that came out of Utrecht University. Have you ever heard of the Little Ice Age?
No.
There was a period in world history, global history. I think it may have been kind of localized to Europe. So let's say European history.
Okay.
In about the 1500s, where there was this inexplicable period of cold.
Interesting.
Right? It's called the Little Ice Age.
Harmful cold?
It got cold. Okay. It, like our conception of like why, you know, Vikings wear pelts and everything, they're always walking around, it's very cold.
Yeah.
Not just because they live in Scandinavia, but because it was cold then. Okay?
Yeah.
So this Little Ice Age, like I said, inexplicable. No one had any idea why it happened. And these Utrecht researchers got a hold of some tree samples, some leaf samples from eras before the Little Ice Age and after. And they started counting stomas. These are the pores on the leaves. The more stomas you have, the more carbon dioxide there is in the air. Leaves develop these stomas so they can absorb more CO2, right?
All right.
So, ipso facto, the more stomas you have, the more CO2 in the atmosphere.
Sure.
And what they found by counting these stomas was that there was a lot of CO2 prior to the 1340s in Europe.
Okay.
That means that there was not that much CO2, or no, that there was a lot of CO2 in the air, in the atmosphere.
Okay.
One reason there's a lot of CO2 is because there's not a lot of trees to soak that CO2 up.
Okay.
One reason there's not a lot of trees is because humans are cutting down the trees to farm land, right?
Or to stay warm? Did that have anything to do with the Ice Age?
Sure. Okay. There's fewer trees, deforestation brought on by human activity.
Okay.
Okay? So what they find then is that after 1350, roughly, there's suddenly fewer stomas, which means that there's less CO2 in the air, which means that there's more trees. Do you know why there are more trees?
Yeah.
Do you?
I have a pretty good guess.
It's because in between that time, the 1340s and the 1350s, the Black Death happened.
Yeah.
And so many people died that it had a measurable effect on the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere because of not that many trees and then suddenly lots of trees because there was no one to tend the farmland. Isn't that interesting?
You know what else? This was a tidbit from the end, but we might as well say it here. They think that there is a lack of genetic diversity in the UK today because of the Black Death.
Mm-hmm.
They were much more genetically diverse than the 11th century.
Right. It represented what's called a population bottleneck.
Yeah. 25 million people died, about a third of the population of Europe, which is mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
All right, let's do it.
Well, I was reading this one historian. His name is Skip Knox, and I don't know where he is now, but when he wrote that, it was at the university. No, Boise State. And he said...
Go Broncos.
He goes, it's worth saying, this has never happened before or since.
Like, what, the Black Death?
An event like this, where within about 2-3 years, 25 million people died.
Mm-hmm.
That's never happened before.
Yeah.
I mean, no war can account for that.
Yeah, no other pandemic.
Yeah, this was it. This was as bad as it gets, and it was bad, Chuck.
The Big Death, it was bad. And it was bad not just because of the ultimate devastation, but it was bad because of how gnarly the Black Death is.
Yeah, why don't you talk about some symptoms?
All right. If you had the Black Death, this is what you had to look forward to. First of all, you had no idea what was happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Neither did your doctor.
Neither did your local cardinal or bishop.
And, you know, they didn't know a lot back then, but they had their, like, cockeyed theories at least. They didn't even have cockeyed theories on this.
They had a cockeyed theory that everybody went along with.
Yeah, they developed some. But initially, they were like, I don't know what this is.
Right.
But you have these big tumor lumps. You've got them on your body. You got black spots.
Well, tell them about the tumor. Some were small, but they could get pretty big.
Yeah, some as big as an apple, and they said in the article here that if you had one on your neck, it could permanently, like, cock your head to one side.
Permanently meaning, like, the 5 days you had left to live.
I know. I hope it's okay to laugh a little bit this now. I mean, surely no one from the 1300s. You had pus oozing out of sores, open sores. You had a nasty smell because you were rotting from the inside out. Your breath was awful. It was gruesome. Purple splotches.
Mm-hmm. God's tokens, right?
Yeah, they call them God's tokens because once you got these, that means God's going to take you off the earth pretty soon.
Right.
So that's God's token.
Fevers that could fry your brain, send you into delirium.
Vomiting. Coughing up blood. Blood and pus oozing. I've already said oozing pus.
I think you did, but it's worth saying twice.
So those are some of the symptoms, and once you start having these symptoms, you are pretty much done for within a matter of days.
Right, and so in our modern day, it takes a little while to bury somebody, even with this machinery,
sure.
right, that we use to dig modern graves. But back then, it took even longer to dig a grave, to hold the service, to bury somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And when people died within days and suddenly there was like a third of the population dying off, there was no time to bury anybody. No space even.
They're literally stacking up. Dogs eating corpses. It says in here children, hungry babies beside their dead mothers.
Yeah, Molly Edmonds really went
Is that who wrote this?
Yeah.
Whew, man.
Yeah, it was pretty,
but that's the truth. I mean, that
pretty
was
crazy.
That was the raw truth. It was an ugly, ugly, ugly scene.
And of course, anyone who's seen Monty Python knows that there are people who operated carts that banged on like pots and said, "Bring out your dead."
Yeah,
yeah.
And well, we'll get into the flinging of corpses too.
Well, let's get into the flinging because that's kind of how it started. And first, I want to point out the Black Death. You know, gripped Europe. It did not only impact Europe. It's so funny. It's so Eurocentric, the way we approach the Black Death. It started in the Gobi Desert sometime in the late 1320s.
Yeah, in Asia.
In China. China lost 35 million people in the 14th century from the Black Death.
But no one ever mentions that. I know. They always hear about the Black Death in Europe.
So it was localized, and it was actually in Asia, in Central Asia, for a decade or two. But they blame it pretty squarely on the Genoese for bringing it to Europe, right?
Yes.
How'd the Genoese get it?
Well, in 1347, in Kaffa, which is modern-day Ukraine, it was a Genoese trading post. They were attacked by the Tartar army. Tartars start to die off by the plague, and the Genoese are like, sweet! Mm-hmm. God is punishing our enemies, and they're dying.
Heathens!
Let's have a big party and celebrate. And then the Tartars are like, well, we're going to start flinging our dead corpses over the wall at you because the smell is so awful, you will die from the smell. They weren't
Which
too far off.
It was a stupid idea, but...
Stupid idea, but it worked because they actually, what they were doing was germ warfare. Very early germ warfare.
Right. They had it wrong, though. They thought it was a smell.
Sure.
Actually, it was this pestilence.
And so the Genoese, you know, said, oh, we need to get rid of these nasty bodies, but it was too late. They were infected by that point. The Genoese fled to Sicily, and then from there it took two paths. One, where was the first one?
The first one went up through Austria and Germany.
Right.
And then the second path went through Italy to France to the UK.
Yes, at a speed which doesn't sound fast, but it really is if you're talking about Black Death. About 2.5 miles a day.
And not only is it fast, like even by today's standards, this is when people were riding horses and carts and stuff.
2.5 miles a day was fast.
That's lightning fast. It's bullet train fast for that time.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it called the Black Death, actually? Do you know this?
I do. So there was a mistranslation at some point.
What do you mean?
Well, back in the day, people called it the Big Death or the Great Mortality. The Big Death, that's bad.
That's what they called it as it was happening.
Right.
Okay.
And then later on it came to be known as the Atra Mors, which is Latin for terrible death or black death.
Ah.
At some point in time, somebody decided that they liked the Black Death better.
Okay.
It's sometime in the 18th century when they were using it to differentiate the plague of London in 1665. But they mistranslated it. It wasn't originally called the Black Death or the Terrible Death. It was called the Big Death.
Gotcha.
And then it just kind of went from there.
All right. Well, at the time, King Philip VI of France turned it over to the Paris College of Physicians, who were like the Mayo Clinic of the time. And they said, here, we need to figure out what this is. What is it, smartest doctors in the world? And they says, well, you know, we figured it out. It's all here in the report. This is this happened when Saturn and Jupiter and Mars lined up in Aquarius. And Jupiter's real wet and hot, and it soaked up the evil vapors from the Earth, and Mars is dry. So it exploded those vapors, and now it is a fog of death.
And they very smugly pinpointed the time that it happened, 1 p.m. on March 20th, 1345.
No.
And they just shook their head like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they did say it was a fog of death. My guess is that it was probably pretty foggy for some reason. Some weather system happened.
Or they were onto something, like it was being transmitted through the air somehow.
Sure. Which, you know, they might have been actually onto something there with an airborne pathogen.
Right. Possibly.
But
who knows?
Instead, they went with the fog of death from the planets aligning.
And another term for a fog of death is a miasma. It's a corrupted bit of air. And this is what Europe went with, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, these are the smartest guys as far as medicine goes. They have the longest crow's beak masks of anybody.
Yeah.
And we're going to go with this fog of death thing. So how do we combat it? And what they figured out was, well, since you're breathing this fog, you got to keep the fog at bay. And one good way to do that is to fight fog with fire or smoke.
Sure.
So there were fires everywhere.
Yeah, they were recommended to burn aromatic wood. So people would, and people would even carry this stuff around, rosemary, amber, and musk. The Pope even stood between two fires when he addressed people.
Yeah, they kept them burning on street corners.
Yeah.
And then there were the fact that it was coming from the south and it was a fog of death, they started putting glass in their southern windows so that the southern wind couldn't penetrate it.
See, that kind of smart there.
It is. They weren't all hokey.
No, some that seemed kind of smart. What didn't seem very smart was don't bathe. Don't have physical intimacy, although it's a good way to spread disease, so maybe they're onto something there. Don't sleep during the daytime. Avoid sad thoughts.
That had nothing to do with spreading it. They're like, just don't be lazy.
Yeah, yeah. Avoid sad thoughts about disease.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to that if you believe in the mind.
If you believe in positive psychology.
Exactly. So some of the little hokey, there was a little substance to a bit of it. I have a little cocktail tidbit for you, though.
Let's hear it. I know it is. This is so awesome.
I know. The word quarantine actually comes from the Black Death. In Venice, Italy, they were pretty smart, and they said, you know what, we should start isolating some of these ships of people that are coming in, not let them come on land until we know that no one on board is sick.
Right.
So let's do this for like 30 days, and then they went, no, that's not long enough. Let's do it for 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
40 days or 40 giorni. Quarantine. That's where the word came from.
Well, it's not as much of a stretch if somebody besides Chuck is pronouncing it. But yes, that is where quarantine came
from. If you look
from.
At it, it looks like the word quarantine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty smart, too. There are some smart people. Still, 60% of the population of Venice died within, I think, 18 months.
Yeah.
So the quarantine, while practical and useful, you know, didn't protect everybody.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't know what the doctors were doing that much because all we have here is just recorded documents of what was going on.
Well, there wasn't even documentation. It was popular writers.
Yeah.
Church writers.
Yeah, it wasn't like science journals.
I mean, not a lot of people knew how to read and write during this time, and the ones who did normally were affiliated with the church, so they would have had a very religious view of what was going on, right?
Yeah. They're probably bloodletting.
Yeah, the physicians that were working, the crow's mask guys, were bloodletting. They were opening up these buboes, which is... It's almost like a textual representation of a pussy tumor.
Yeah.
A bubo.
They would open these and drain them because that made sense to get rid of whatever's in there, I guess.
Very smart.
Yeah.
We still do that today.
Popping zits.
Yeah. Every Tuesday.
Religion comes into play pretty heavily there because a lot of people said, you know, let's turn to God and pray for help.
Well, a lot of people thought that this was punishment from God.
Oh, yeah, the flagellants.
Yeah, so only he could do anything about it, or she, depending on who you are.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yes, the flagellants, Chuck, take it. The flagellants of Germany.
Yeah, the Brotherhood of the Flagellants.
Flagellants.
Flagellants had already been around.
Not flatulence, though.
No, very big difference. They were already around, but they rose up, like you said, in Germany in the mid-1340s. And they thought it was punishment from God, and they thought, you know what, we're going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've heard of self-flagellation. That's where it comes from. They would walk barefoot across Europe, whipping themselves with their little whatever, cat of nine tails.
Scourges.
Scourges.
Like what have you. That had like sharp kind of barbed ends.
It didn't work, though. And a lot of people turned against God because of that.
They also killed a lot of Jews, the flagellants did, or flagellants.
Yeah,
they
people,
were highly
period,
anti-Semitic.
Didn't they?
They'd kill Jews. They would kill clergy that opposed them, except for the Pope. And the Pope was like, you're officially denounced in, I think, 1349. And that was it for the flagellants. Although, they popped up again in later plagues and pestilences.
Oh, they did?
Uh-huh. But they stopped for the Black Death, like, immediately when the Pope denounced them.
Well, they killed Jews because there was a pretty bad rumor going around that the Jews had... were poisoning the water supply.
Yeah.
And because at the time, Christians and Jews lived separately largely,
mm-hmm.
a lot of Jewish communities were effectively quarantined, so they didn't get hit as hard. So all of a sudden, Jews are, I don't know if prospering is the right word, but they're not dying like the Christians are. So
the Christians started burning them alive.
So they started burning them alive.
Apparently in Strasbourg, Germany was... More Jews died in Germany than anywhere else at the hands of Christians who were upset about the plague. And in Strasbourg in 1348, mm-hmm. on one day, 200 Jews were burned alive at the stake.
Wow.
Just that one city on that one day. And apparently entire communities used to be walled up and set on fire with everybody.
Or Jews would convert to Christianity on the spot.
Or they would set their own houses on fire.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sensible. Like, oh, look, my house is already on fire. I should probably take off.
Right. Keep on walking.
See you guys later.
Well, a lot of Jews fled to the countryside, didn't they, too?
Yes.
Because they were able to.
Yeah.
Good for them is what I say.
Well, I don't think it was just Jews. I think anybody who had the means of going to the countryside, which is crazy because, I mean, like, going to the countryside means, like, stepping out your back door, I thought, in, like, the 14th century.
Yeah.
But apparently there were still
the
wealthy went out to the country once in a while and they would.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was needless to say, it was a really rough few years for Europe. And by 1352, it was largely gone.
Yeah, it just took off.
But what I mean, it's not like, all right, Black Death's gone. Everything's cool now. There were like huge, huge effects.
Apparently the self-flagellation worked, right?
Yeah, sure, that's what it was.
Well, yeah, you have to imagine if a third, right? So that means that between you, me, and Jerry, one of us dies.
Well, it'd clearly be me.
That's not necessarily true.
I'd set myself on fire.
Okay, so then two of us would have died.
Yeah.
Right? A third of this population.
Of the workforce.
Within, like, seriously, like 2 years.
Yeah.
Is just gone. People are being eaten by dogs. Their corpses are being eaten by dogs in the streets. Families are just completely abandoning one another once they get sick. The whole social psyche, the collective psyche of Europe just kind of crumbled a little bit. It took a pretty big ding.
Yeah.
And one of the places it took that ding was in religion. A lot of heretical societies sprung up because it was like, either this was your work, God, or
right.
you didn't do anything to help us, so we're not coming to church anymore.
Well, yeah, instead of being like really thankful that they survived, people partied like it was 1999, basically.
Yeah, big time.
Crazy parties.
Yeah, a lot of debauchery.
Lots of debauchery.
I'm just kidding. There was an economic impact, too, a huge one.
Well, yeah, if a third of the workforce is gone, you've got no one working, so labor's going to skyrocket.
The price of labor is.
Yeah. Cost of goods, food, you know, the little silver lining there, food was in supply because there weren't as many people to eat it.
Exactly.
Sadly.
Isn't that depressing?
The other cool thing, though, is it's potentially we saw the birth of modern science and medicine.
Yeah.
Because of the Black Death, because the leaders were like, you know, this whole planet's aligning thing was pretty stupid now that we look back at it. So why don't we found some schools and do some real research based on physical science and give that a whirl.
Yeah.
And that, and kind of, it started it.
It worked, which is kind of ironic as well, because the population was so decimated that it, even after they had this idea, they had to wait a little while to reopen schools because they couldn't staff them.
Oh, yeah.
And also, Chuck, there was an almost complete loss of any illusions about death and whether or not it's coming for you. There's a whole allegory in art that that sprang up at the time called Dance Macabre,
yeah,
which is the dance of death, which is basically like, you know, showing living people and skeletons, you know, working side by side or hanging out or partying together or
right.
whatever. And the point of that is that, you know, death can come at any time, and it's coming for everybody.
So art and poetry and things like that just took a real downer turn there for a while.
Yep.
Because that was clearly what everyone was thinking about at the time.
That's right, Chuck.
What caused it? See, this is where I get a little confused, because there's conflicting information even to this day.
Well, it's one of those things where we thought we figured it out, but modern techniques and modern investigation have kind of led us to think, did you like that?
Yeah.
Have led us to think that maybe that first idea wasn't right.
Yeah, yeah.
The first idea came out of the third pandemic, which was in 1894 in Hong Kong in India, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And two bacteriologists, Alexander Yersin and Shibasaburo Kitasato.
Nice.
Thanks. They worked independently and isolated the cause of that third pandemic, and it is what we know today as bubonic plague.
Yeah.
It's a bacterium called Yersinia pestis, named after Alexander Yersin, right?
Yeah, well, of course.
And it lives in the foregut of fleas, rodent fleas that feast on rats.
Yeah, this was interesting, I thought.
Because
the flea bites, the regular flea bites rat and drinks blood, and it's like, oh, man, that was fantastic.
I feel delicious.
If you're infected with the Yersinia pestis mm-hmm. in your flea, you bite the rodent and you eat the blood, but it gets stuck in your foregut, and so mm-hmm. you never feel that quench of that tasty, tasty blood in your stomach
right.
if you're a flea, so you keep biting more and more rodents.
And infecting more and more rodents.
Yeah, because you're, like we talked about with the fleas, regurgitating it back onto rodents,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you're killing all these rodents, and then when there are no more rodents, then the fleas will go to people.
Right.
And so they thought that's how it was spread.
Right. Which makes sense, because it's
sure.
not like conditions were really sanitary in the Middle Ages.
Sure, there were plenty of rats.
Or before the Middle Ages. The 14th century, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, there were plenty of rats, plenty of fleas. The problem is there's a lot of discrepancies between bubonic plague, or Yersinia pestis, and whatever the Black Death was, right? So you've got...
like a big discrepancies.
You've got bubos, right?
Yes.
With both, but bubos under the bubonic plague... tend to spring up around the groin area only.
Yeah.
And descriptions of buboes with the Black Death were that they were all over the place, all over your body.
Right.
Buboes or bubonic plague doesn't cause purple splotches.
No.
It doesn't cause delirium.
No, the odors.
It doesn't, yeah, or the vomiting, blood and pus and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that was documented widely by different sources
right.
during the Black Death that doesn't have anything in common with bubonic plague.
Well, the big one to me was the fact that bubonic plague, even if you don't treat it, has a mortality rate of about 60%.
Yeah.
And from the sounds of the Black Death, it was, you know...
near 100.
Taken down entire villages.
Right. So they did figure out that the third pandemic in 1894 was caused by Yersinia pestis, bubonic plague, but they erroneously possibly attributed it to the Black Death. But for about 100 years, that was the premise that everyone went on, was bubonic plague was the Black Death.
Right.
Until 1984, when some researchers who have been dubbed plague deniers...
Oh, really?
Yeah. ...have started to come up with competing theories. And there's some interesting ones.
Yes. Yeah, sociologist Susan Scott and biologist Christopher Duncan think that it is a hemorrhagic fever,
mm-hmm.
like Ebola.
Right.
Makes sense.
Sure.
Some say anthrax Or maybe some just disease that is not around, some extinct disease.
Right, like it went extinct somehow after the Black Death.
The thing, though, is this DNA study in the 1990s, they dug up some corpses from mass graves in France, tested the teeth, because I guess dental pulp is about the only thing you can test at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they did find that the Y. pestis in the samples, so they said, oh, yeah, see, it was the plague. But then they apparently looked at other bodies from other grave sites, and it wasn't conclusive. So
no, they didn't find it.
Yeah, they didn't find it at all.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
I don't know.
What do you think?
Well, Skip Knox, that historian I referred to earlier, his theory is that it was bubonic plague working in concert with a pneumonic plague.
Ah.
So it was respiratory, which is...
Bubo-pneumonic?
Yeah. Which is basically his idea is that there are two plagues working at once. Or that's the theory he subscribes to. Which I don't know. It seems likelier to me that there's probably some bacterium that's either extinct or, worse than that, dormant.
Right, right.
Let's hope it's extinct.
Yeah, dormant's not the word I want to be hearing right now.
Oh, and there's one other thing that was a problem with the fleas. There were two other problems that we didn't mention. One was that there should have been a die-off of rats, because remember, they jump from rats to humans when there's no more rats.
Right.
And there's no documented die-off of rats in Europe before the plague.
Ever.
And then secondly, what was the second one?
Winter should kill fleas.
That's right, Chuck.
But it didn't. It
didn't have any effect on the spread of the Black Death.
Yeah. Well, the other problem, though, is it's like we said, it's all stuff that's written down. So it's not like, you know, you said the buboes are near the groin area.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you know, with the sensationalism of the day, people, they could have been writing, you know, sores all over their body. And, you know, they could have exaggerated some of the symptoms.
Right.
Because of fear. I just don't know how much I trust the records of the 1300s in Europe.
Well, plus also there was no standardized medical jargon either for them to use.
Yeah,
well,
that's true too. So,
or that they could use that we would understand.
Yeah, so we're cobbling together what we think they meant, what this one person meant.
But they think the numbers of deaths are pretty accurate.
Really?
Yeah, which is pretty crazy. One third. Oh, and we were talking about how it's so Eurocentric. In Cairo... 7,000 deaths a day at its peak.
The bubonic plague or Black Death?
Sorry, the Black Death.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's it for Black Death. If you want to see some pretty cool pictures and read more about it, I strongly recommend this one. Type in Black Death in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And it's time now for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this our second Mafia mail. Sometimes we get so much mail from one topic that we feel like we should read more than one email on that topic.
Especially when it's accompanied by physical threats.
That's right. So this is from Kate the Canuck Stewart, is what she calls herself, which I thought was kind of funny. Hi, Josh and Chuck and Jerry. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, but have never written in before because I never had much to say besides, oh my gosh, I love you guys. It's a great reason to write in, by the way.
Sure.
However, after listening to the Mafia cast, I just had to write you an email to have some info from my family's past. My grandmother, on my mother's side, is a second cousin to the infamous Lucky Luciano. Most of the men in her family were made, and although she was largely kept out of the loop when it came to the wheelings and underdealings of her family, like Diane Keaton and The Godfather, there is one event that really brought home the kinds of things her brother and cousins were up to. When my mom was only a baby, my grandfather ran out on my grandma. When my great-uncle heard about this, he and his cousins asked my grandma if she wanted them to take care of him for her. She really didn't know what that meant, but responded, maybe even jokingly, well, don't kill him or anything. The next day, she got a phone call that her husband had been admitted to a hospital, badly beaten, with both of his legs broken.
Wow.
Clearly, it wasn't prudent to mess around with members of my family. There are other rumors swirling around about different ventures that my great-uncle and cousins were involved in, but they were notoriously tight-lipped about everything. As far as I know, no one in my family is a part of the mob anymore, and no one has broken the legs of any of my ex-boyfriends. But, I wouldn't date you.
Just to be on the safe side, huh?
That is Kate the Canuck.
Wow. Thanks a lot, Kate. Appreciate that. And all you Canucks listening out there, thank you very much. Chuck, let's talk about Kiva.
Yes, it's time, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're on track. We formed a Kiva team. Kiva is a micro-lending site, right, where you lend in $25 increments to Kiva, who turns around and funds loans to entrepreneurs in developing countries, right?
Yes.
Read all about it. Type in Kiva in the blogs at howstuffworks.com, and it'll bring up all sorts of educational stuff, right?
Yeah, Josh wrote some great blogs. If you have doubts about Kiva, Josh really broke it down very nicely in a couple of blog posts if you want to read those.
Thank you.
Sure.
Well, we have a Kiva team, and within the first year, we reached $250,000 in loans from our Kiva team.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Very.
We're on our way to $500,000 in loans by May. That's our goal. And we're on track.
Are we?
Yeah, we're at like about 380 right now.
Wow.
Yeah. People are just awesome. We've got some really great team members. Apparently, we also have plenty of team members who've never made a loan. So if you're one of those folks, go make a loan.
So they join the team and then don't make a loan?
Yeah.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, it is.
That's Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
It's microlending by proxy.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, that's our Kiva team. We're very proud of each and every one of you guys. We're very proud of each and every one of you who are lending on our team. If you want to join, it's open to anybody. Please do. You can go to www.kiva.org/team, that's singular, /stuffyoushouldknow, and sign up. Pretty cool.
Do it.
Facebook. Facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. Twitter is SYSK podcast. That's us.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
A lot of fun.
Both of them. And then, yeah, you can send us an email, stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called How the Black Death Worked, originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on February 10th, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine quicksand and whether or not it can really kill you. This episode was originally podcast on June 24th, 2010.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Bryant. Chuck Bryant.
You pointed at me as if I was supposed to say, hey, and welcome to the podcast.
I know.
I almost did. I was like,
I know. The trick is to point and start talking at almost the same time. There needs to be like maybe 8 or 10 millisecond delay.
All right, all you journalism school students, broadcasting tips from Josh.
Throws everybody off of their game. It's good.
Point and speak.
Like, you know what I just did? I just assumed domination of this podcast, the whole thing.
Well, you do that every time.
That's not true. So, Chuck, have you ever seen Gilligan's Island?
Yeah, bunch of times.
Did you know that by my estimate, Gilligan's Island holds the record for most number of episodes used by a television show featuring quicksand as a device?
I've got five.
Five.
Yeah.
Me too.
Gilligan got caught. Skipper got caught. Mr. Howell faked his death. Remember that one?
No. What did he do? Just put the hat on top of some quicksand?
Yeah. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah, I do remember that.
He changed his will to include the castaways, and he thought they were trying to kill him, so he ran away and faked his death.
Oh.
But they were really just planning a party for him.
I'll bet.
And then botanist Lord Beasley, who was one of their random guests that they had.
I don't remember him.
I don't either. And Ginger and Marianne apparently got caught one night.
Huh.
That's some sexy quicksand.
I'll bet it is, yeah. So I don't think there's anybody out there who's unfamiliar with quicksand.
No.
It's just such a great little throw to anytime there's a jungle scene or something and things are getting boring and you're a writer and it's 1957 or 1968 right. or 1985.
Uh-huh.
You say quicksand.
Yeah. You don't see it a lot lately in films and TV, though.
We've gotten slightly more sophisticated.
I think people realize it was not really a big thing.
I don't think it's just with quicksand.
Yeah.
I think we have gotten generally more sophisticated. In the 80s, who were pretty much throughout the whole decade the biggest box office draws?
Oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger, maybe?
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone. Sure.
Yeah. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
Not a very thinking decade, right?
Yeah, good point.
Then you move into the 90s, and you have more guys like Edward Norton.
RDJ.
Whoever that is.
Robert Downey Jr.
Right, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Who I am very heartened to see is making quite a comeback.
Well.
He's gotten off of the black tar and into life.
and into box office gold.
Yeah. Have you seen Sherlock Holmes?
No.
I have seen that movie like 8 times.
Are we ever going to talk about quicksand?
So quicksand, Chuck, can it kill you?
I saw a thing that said theoretically if you were stuck over your head and you couldn't get out, obviously you could drown in it, but I believe you have a scientific study to refute that.
There was a study, and we found from researching, reading an article on the site, and just kind of looking around, there's a very finite amount of information out there on quicksand because there's just a finite amount to know about quicksand.
It's not as exciting as it is in the movies, so say that.
Which explains my Robert Downey Jr. tirade.
Right.
There was a 2005 study that pretty much put the period on the sentence about quicksand. It said it's physically impossible for a human being to sink into a pit of quicksand and die.
Okay, sure. I think this, what I suppose was if you were like dropped on your head into the quicksand.
Yes.
But it's usually not even so deep as to be taller than a human, so.
No, there. If you're just a guy, if it's just you or I,
that's me,
and you fall into a pit of quicksand,
yes,
that is say 7 feet deep,
okay,
which is exceedingly rare.
Sure,
right.
Yeah,
most
yeah.
of the time, it's much shallower than that, so
right.
you just stand up.
Yeah,
right. We are less dense than quicksand. The density of the human body is about 1 gram per cubic centimeter. Or about 1 gram per milliliter of water.
Okay.
All right? Quicksand is about twice that. So
yeah.
if you just sit there, you become buoyant.
Yeah, you float on water, and quicksand is denser than water, so you'll definitely float on quicksand.
Exactly. So you can't
Are we
sink.
Done?
We could be. But let's talk about sand and the properties of quicksand, which, by the way, is falls under the purview of a field of science called rheology.
Really?
It's the study of... basically, it's the study of the flow and deformation of unusual things like mayonnaise or silly putty or quicksand. Seriously.
Right.
So rheology studies quicksand, foam, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Things that, like mayonnaise, when you carve some mayonnaise out
yeah.
with a knife,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't go back to a flat surface
no,
like
it
should.
Doesn't.
But it's still liquid, technically. It
sure.
should have flow. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Rheology.
I love mayo. I'm a mayo man, Josh. Quicksand is, if we want to define it, it's solid ground, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the oatmeal. I tried to find out what they used in movies, and the closest I could find was Fuller's Earth, like mixed with water. You ever heard of Fuller's Earth?
Huh.
It's this really, really powdery dirt, light brown, and you use it a lot on film sets for all sorts of stuff.
Gotcha.
But that's what I think it is, anyway. It looks like oatmeal to me. But in reality, it's solid ground, and it's just liquefied solid earth because it's been super saturated.
Yeah, and there's generally two ways that it can occur, right?
Yeah.
There is the upward movement of water,
sure.
say from a spring,
uh-huh.
or an earthquake
yeah.
can kind of loosen it, and then you couple that with the introduction of water,
yeah.
bam, quicksand.
Not too far from a sinkhole in some ways.
No. Not too far at all, frankly.
We've been on a geology kick lately, haven't
we? I know. I was thinking that we're kind of completing an earth sciences module
yeah.
here.
This is our elementary school science project.
Exactly, yeah. So that's pretty much the two ways that quicksand can form. And especially with one, say, where you have an upward movement.
Right.
All right, let's talk about sand in general.
Okay.
Dry sand.
Yes.
You're walking along the beach. You're getting friction from the ground,
uh-huh.
which is why you're not falling down.
Yeah.
Right? The sand has something that's called a friction chain, I believe.
Right.
And that means that the force that you're putting on it is distributed across the particles.
Right.
So it forms a solid layer.
Sure.
There's solid resistance,
mm-hmm.
right? With quicksand, water molecules have been introduced in enough...
They're agitated, right?
Well, you don't even need to agitate it.
Oh,
if you can get water in there,
okay,
say through a spring,
right,
floating upward, the water molecules are forming basically little pockets around the sand particles. They're
right.
not connected by friction any longer,
right?
Right. So they're not solid.
Yeah.
They're not stable. And then if you add some sort of movement,
mm-hmm.
say an earthquake or somebody's foot. The force of somebody's foot going on it,
right.
then it just that whole whatever friction there is that keeps it stable,
right,
is lost.
Right. So, like, you've been to the beach, right? Remember when you were a kid? You've never been to the beach?
Yeah.
I've been to the beach with you, my friend, San Diego.
That's right.
Although we didn't, you know, frolic or anything.
No, it's kind of cold.
There was no time.
December.
No time for frolicking, unfortunately. But you remember, like, when you were a kid, let's say you would walk into where the water is coming up and then receding, and you would start to sink a little bit, and then your feet would kind of, you know, if you let yourself go, your feet would become stuck.
Right.
And I remember being a kid and thinking, wow, that's kind of frightening. Because they would really become locked in if you get up to, let's say, your ankle. And that's kind of just the same principle, right?
Right. That's the exact same principle. It's the same thing with, like, wet concrete, too. When your foot, say your foot or your leg goes in there and is occupying space, you're creating this density.
Right.
Which, I guess, creates some sort of suction force, like a vacuum.
Yeah, vacuum. Exactly.
Which makes it very difficult to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
That 2005 study in Nature concluded that to pull your foot out of quicksand at a rate of 1 centimeter a second, which is fairly moderate. I think I can do that. That looks like 1 centimeter a second, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. To do that when it's stuck in quicksand requires the equivalent amount of force that it would take to lift a medium-sized car.
So, like, only Chuck Norris could probably do that.
Chuck Norris and only Chuck Norris.
Right. Wow.
Definitely not Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's crazy.
Right. So you don't want to try to move your feet at, you know, a centimeter a second. You want to slowly move them, and you want to wriggle them, from what I understand.
Wriggle?
You want to wriggle, actually, because what you're doing is you're very slowly creating space, pockets around your legs, which are stuck.
Right.
That allows the water to come in, which allows it to break
less
up
resistance.
The sand sediment, right?
So are you talking about how to actually get out of quicksand?
It feels like that's what we just moved into.
Yeah, I mean, it that's the one part that I found is similar to the movies. Everything else is kind of really just a movie type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true, they say, the more you move and struggle, the more you will sink.
Right.
Just like regular water, though. If you were drowning,
mm-hmm.
they say the same thing. If you were drowning and you actually calm down, you would float.
Right.
But your constant thrashing about will pull you under.
Right, and it creates a stronger vacuum, basically,
yeah.
the more you move, right?
Sure.
Have you seen that Man versus Wild segment?
No.
Where he's in quicksand?
No, I've seen the show.
Dude, the guy gets into a thing of quicksand, real-life quicksand,
uh-huh.
and shows you how to get out.
Really?
And it's...
like have your cameraman hand you a rope?
That was another thing, too, from that study in Nature.
Uh-huh.
Again, this thing is like the... You know, you don't need to do it. It's been done. No,
right.
No other study needs to be done on quicksand.
Sure.
But they said, one of the authors said, don't ask your friends to pull you out, say with a vine or a stick.
Well, that's what they always do in the movies.
I know. It could conceivably pull you in half.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. One of the authors of that,
wow.
that study, that rheology study, said, you don't want to do that.
What did Bear Grylls do?
He slowly wriggled his way out, right?
Okay.
And the weird thing is it's just the oddest thing. I would recommend everybody, like, I'm sure Discovery has it. We probably have it.
Sure.
If not, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube, but, you know, Bear and Quicksand or something like that.
Right.
He's in this, it looks like a beach. You know how the beach looks at, like, kind of medium tide or something? So it's like there's the sand, but then there's this thin layer of water over it.
Yeah.
Just kind of floating on the top.
Mm-hmm.
He's in that, and he's up to about his waist in quicksand, and he's pulling himself out. So he's got his elbow up on the very quicksand that the rest of his body is in.
But it's resting on top of it,
yeah,
almost?
Yeah, it looks really odd.
I might have seen that, actually.
It's pretty cool. But he slowly pulls out, and what you want to do is get into a supine position on
right.
your back, because you're just going to float. Because, again, you're less dense than quicksand.
Good point. Obviously, you're going to find quicksand. I mean, you can find it anywhere if the conditions are right, but generally, you're going to find it more around, like, marshes and mm-hmm. rivers, oceans, where there's groundwater,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
And if you are hapless enough to get caught in quicksand in like along a beach on a shore,
uh-huh.
you're going to want to get out of there very slowly. But surely, because eventually the tide's going to come in and you're in big trouble.
Oh.
Especially if you've seen Creepshow. You know what happens to Ted Danson.
Yeah, buried up to his head, wasn't he? Yeah,
by Leslie Nielsen.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that was no Naked Gun joke. That was the real deal.
It really was. What else we got?
Well, Dry Quicksand, you sent that article to me?
Yeah, that article was written by our buddy Alan Bellows, who we've actually never met and don't know, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for. He's over at Damn Interesting. I think he's the founder.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he wrote an article on quicksand and was talking about, like you said, dry quicksand, right?
Yeah, and this is not anything that they've observed in nature, but they have created this in a lab, right, where I think the sand is sort of like a house of cards. It's so loose that it barely can hold its own weight.
Right. It's so, like kind of, I think it was, say you had sand kicked up by a dust storm.
Right.
And then when it's deposited again, if it's deposited theoretically.
Right.
Because like you said, it's never been proven to exist outside of the lab.
Right.
But theoretically, if it was deep enough, it could look like it was solid.
Right.
And for all intents and purposes, it was stable until you walk on it.
Right.
The problem is if it's deeper than you are tall, there's nothing, there's no water to make you buoyant. You're gone.
It will kill you.
It will swallow you whole. and yeah, it's like, so when you go down, it puffs up some sand, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like the movie Dune or something. Like you would be swallowed into the very sand.
Frank Herbert, quite a visionary.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's folklore as far as we know, although it has been, like you said, done in the lab. And there's a cool... there's a cool like series of photos of it looks like an apple on top of some dry quicksand.
Oh,
sucked
under. I saw that.
And if you look at the time, it's like 0.07 seconds.
Wow.
Or maybe 0.7 seconds.
Almost like a sinkhole.
Yes, again.
Geology special.
Yes. What should we do next? Like crystals?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do crystal skulls.
Caves and crystal skulls. Should we talk a little bit more about the movies and TV?
I think we should. Again,
you got anything else?
Not a lot about quicksand.
That almost sounds conciliatory. Like, I'm sorry we did this one. Josh, Blazing Saddles, of course. I always mention one of my favorite films had a quicksand scene early on.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny. There was a movie in 1967. Actually, we should point out we got all these from quicksandmovies.net. And they, I think, literally have every reference of quicksand ever in film and TV history.
It's your one-stop shop for quicksand movie references.
So I just plucked a few interesting ones that were relevant to us. Well, actually, this one isn't relevant to us, but the rest are. There was one movie called The Acid Eaters, a.k.a. The Acid People, from 1967. Four average middle-class couples become weekend hippies, riding motorcycles, frolicking nude, and having a climactic, I can't say that word, adult party on a large white pyramid of LSD. During a topless catfight, a woman is thrown into the quicksand up to her bare chest as several bad actors stand around and watch. The next shot is just her arm above the surface giving everyone the finger.
Huh. I gotta check that out.
Sounds like a classic.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about TV. It's been in one episode of MacGyver.
Yeah.
Three episodes of Benny Hill.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Three G.I. Joe cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Three episodes of Dynasty. Four episodes of Fantasy Island. Of course, I knew that would have been a little higher.
Yeah.
I love this one. Four episodes of General Hospital.
Has it really?
Yeah. So set in a hospital had four quicksand incidences.
Right. No, I think I saw one back in like 81 or 82 when Luke and Laura were trapped on some island or something.
Yeah, there's always like an island scenario in a soap opera.
And there's always quicksand when there's an island.
Of course. Magnum P.I., you want to talk about this one?
I want you to.
The show was called Operation Silent Night from 1980. The guys were stranded on a barren island at Christmas because the helicopter broke.
Not just a barren island that's being used for naval bombing exercises.
That's right.
It's very tense.
And while gathering palm fronds, Rick walks into a mud bog, thinks it's quicksand, and he sinks up to his chin before the guys tell him to stand up and get out.
Yeah, and if you ever do fall into quicksand, keep calm if you're with your friends. Make sure that you've hit the bottom. I've actually done this before. What you're just describing happened to Rick happened to me, and it's terrifying. I'm not kidding.
Really?
It's terrifying. I was screeching like, help, get me out, right?
Uh-huh.
And I realized that my feet were on solid ground.
Right.
I'm not kidding. This really happened.
I believe it.
Okay, thank you. It's very scary, but once you realize you have your footing, it's very relieving. But if you can kind of keep the feigned terror going, afterward, you just stop, hold out your hands, and go, ta-da.
And Hippie Rob will say, oh, man, that was a close one.
Actually, it wasn't Hippie Rob. It was another hippie friend, Justin, who was there.
Hippie Justin.
Yeah, he can attest to it.
I guess we'll close out with three episodes of The Simpsons.
Let's.
Mole Man was in quicksand at one point.
Yeah.
The cat of The Simpsons, I think there was a water leak or something, and the litter acted as quicksand and sucked the cat into it.
I don't remember that one.
And then, of course, the scene where the episode where Marge and Homer went to a spa. Homer's getting the massage by the woman, and she's walking on his back, and she starts sinking into his back fat.
And he tells her not to struggle.
Yeah, he'll only sink faster.
So there you go.
That's it.
That is quicksand done and done. If you want to see a pretty cool flash animation of some guy in a sleeveless t-shirt sinking in quicksand, and if you want to read the only article on How Stuff Works that explicitly cites the worst case scenario handbook,
yeah,
just type quicksand, one word, into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. Again, check out Damn Interesting's article. It's very cool. And if you can find anything about rheology, check it out. It's pretty interesting stuff, right?
You know, I knew a guy in L.A. that knew the dude that wrote those books.
Oh, really?
The worst case scenario books.
We have a fan who
loaded
wrote a, I'm sure,
yeah,
who wrote a zombie survival handbook. Did you ever read that?
I did.
It is excellent.
It is way excellent.
I love that book. I read it from cover to cover, Chuck.
Really?
First time ever.
So, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, which means it's time for listener mail.
I acted like I couldn't go forward. Actually, Josh, in lieu of listener mail this week, this is going to be fun. Today on Facebook, with your permission, I said, you know what? Listener mail is getting a little dry, so why don't we just take some questions from the Facebook fans, and we'll answer, like, 10 quick ones on the air.
Okay.
And I highlighted some for you. And we got, like, 180 questions inside an hour.
Are we just doing, like, was it that many? 180 in an hour?
And climbing. I had to cut it off.
Did we, are we just reading their first names or first and last?
I would say just first.
But what about the privacy settings on Facebook?
Renee says, do you discuss what points you'll cover ahead of time, or does it happen more organically? And as most people know, we kind of don't prep that much with each other at all. We just do our research, and then we come in, and we have our first conversation right here.
That's right. Today we broke protocol with me sending Chuck that damn interesting article. That's about as close as we come to really sharing information.
Yeah.
We're very, we jealously guard our own research, don't we?
If it feels spontaneous and conversational, it's because it is.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
I got one. This is from Nick. If one of you couldn't make a recording and the oat hair had to choose a replacement... Dash, who would be your fantasy recording partner?
Yeah, I can never record with anyone else but you.
That was very sweet. I'll say the same thing, though.
Yeah, I was setting you up there. Nicholas says, how does Josh get prepared when he writes an article? And how do you manage to remember all the names when you're recording? That's for you.
All the names when we're recording? What do you mean?
Well, how do you get prepared when you write an article, and how do you remember all this junk that we say?
Oh, I have found that my brain is a lot more sponge-like than I ever realized before. Sometimes you've seen it. I'll just be sitting there spouting stuff off, and I'll like give you this look like, can you believe that I'm not looking at a piece of paper right now?
Yeah.
It's awesome. To get prepared, I drink 2 raw eggs out of a glass.
Yeah, Rocky style.
Uh-huh. And then I find that I podcast best. I'm at my most relaxed when I'm pantsless, as I am right now.
Tony, to Jerry, if Josh and Chuck were trapped in a burning building and you only had time to save one of them before it collapsed and killed the other, who would you save?
And here's Jerry's response to that. Oh, Jerry, that was so nice. Thank you for saying that. I have one. This one's from Anna. Where did you each go to college, and what were your majors? Chuck, I know where you went to college.
We went to the same college.
We did.
UGA, University of Georgia.
Yes, go Dogs. How are we looking this year? Are we going to have a decent football team?
You can never tell.
Fingers crossed.
English major here. I think you were too, right?
No, history, and I minored in anthropology.
I knew that. Why did I say that?
So there you have it.
Jessica Crouch, a Facebook fan and a looker. She says, what's our biggest pet peeve? I think mine is the cell phone, loud cell phone talkers in public. I'm not into that.
Biggest pet peeve. I would say Jeez, I have so many of them. I'll just grab one out of thin air. People who misspell there, depending on the context.
Good one.
But that's just so dumb, but I guess all pet peeves are dumb, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple of more?
Sure. Nikki says, any podcast that you're both itching to do but haven't plucked up the courage to do yet? Yes. Furries and paraphilias. Chuck?
Scientology.
Nice.
I don't want to get rubbed out. Where did Josh go to high school? From Bob, the Toledo dude?
I actually went to Sprayberry High School in beautiful Marietta, Georgia, but I went to junior high school in Toledo at Burndale Junior High. Again, the Bulldogs. I have a Bulldogs theme going through my educational history.
Becca says, think of someone close to you who has passed away. If you had a chance to spend one more hour with them, but it would cost you a year of your life, would you and who? And I would absolutely shave a year off of my old life to hang out with my granddad, like, as an adult.
Wow.
Because he was a cool dude. And he died when I was, like, 14, so I didn't get a chance to, like, talk to him about good adult stuff.
That is very neat. Very neat, Chuck. I have one for you. Matt Ramsey has a question for you, Chuck. I imagine it's not for me because I don't have a... Well, you don't want to be in my basement.
All right.
Too many horrible acts have been committed down there. Can my band come open up for your band in your basement, Chuck?
Yeah, sure, man.
Yeah?
That'd be awesome.
Matt, you send an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. I'll give you directions to Chuck's house.
My dog will be very excited to have someone else down there playing.
I've got another one.
All right.
Noel says, what is the difference between a cream soup and a chowder? Can I answer this one?
Yeah.
So, Chuck, it's really actually all geography.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
The French word for pot evolved into chaudière, chaudron.
Or cauldron, maybe?
Maybe.
Later.
Yeah, and that's the only difference. There's no cooking difference. There's no ingredient difference.
That's what I've heard.
It's all just...
If you're New England, it's a chowder.
Yeah.
If you're elsewhere, it's cream soup.
Yep.
All right, that's it for those, but we got another batch coming on the next podcast.
The next one?
Yeah, the one we record right after this one.
Oh, really, do we?
Yeah.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called Can Quicksand Kill You? Originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on June 24th, 2010. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at stuffpodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at HowStuffWorks.com as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org.
You're tuned to the Downtown Soulville Show on WFMU. My name's Mr. Finewine. I spin Soul 45s every Friday night from 8 to 9 p.m. And tonight, it's a special show. I'm doing it live from the WFMU Record Fair at the Metropolitan Pavilion in Manhattan at 125 West 18th Street. So if you wanted to, you could actually come by and say hi to me. What a concept. This record fair is going on all weekend. $7 at the door. Goes till 10 tonight. 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. All kinds of amazing stuff going on here. Soul 45s till 9.
This girl don't wear no ponytail. Don't wear no polish on her nails. She may not have a lot, but what she's got is good enough for me. Don't have no wiggle in her walk. She'll win no beauty prize, but how she satisfies, and that's good enough for me.